Good morning. Let me call the Thursday, May 29th, 2008 study session to order and the last study session for this council. We have seven items. The first one is to review items on the agenda for the June 2nd, 2008 regular council meeting. So let's go ahead and flip over to that in our packet. And I think after page one, it's probably Scott Smith's turn to, because he will be sworn in by then. Is Scott in the audience this morning? Okay, well, let's go through it then. Otherwise, I'd just turn it over to Mr. Smith and let him do it, but I didn't give him an advance warning, so I apologize, Scott. Let's go to page two. Get to conduct a public hearing, and the proposed 08-09 budget, fiscal budget, will be on the agenda. Page three, have contracts, ordinances on the bottom. Vice Mayor.
Just a reminder for everybody about the budget. It sets the limit for how much, it's the legal limit for how much can be spent, but underneath that legal limit, the council, the incoming council, can make changes if they wish to make changes.
Correct.
And they can lower the amount that's spent, they just can't raise the amount. So, just so everybody knows.
Okay. That's page three, page four. And, all right. We have a lot of rate modifications continuing on page five.
Mayor?
Yes.
We can place, if council's comfortable with it, 13C and 13H back on consent. We had some question whether there might be a conflict with an incoming council member, but there is not. So those can be placed back on consent.
Okay, let's put C and H back on. And let's go to page seven. All right. I see. Hey, Scott, we were just talking about you earlier. On Monday, I'll have you go through the agenda with the new council. All right. Okay, then we get into subdivision plats on page 7. On 14B, the charter school item, isn't there a state requirement on action within a certain period of time? And also, I'm curious on what was resolved on the Barbara Bush Elementary School that was I think it's Barbara Bush, the one on McKellips between Greenfield and Higley, just south of McKellips?
McClellan.
There was some dispute in there that they built that school in an industrial area and had some problems with it. So it might be a good briefing for the new council before they act on that.
Sure. Mayor and Council, with regard to the Barbara Bush School, that predates me a little bit, so I might not have the history exactly right. It looks like Councilmember Walters has it, but as I understand it, it did go into the industrial district, and that was what has generated the requirement for the council use permit request that we now look at. And there is a time limit on the charter schools. We're well within that with this one on Rembrandt.
Okay. And what was the time frame? Because I know charter schools preempted something.
It's a 90-day processing time that we have to work through our system.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes, Scott.
On that 14B item also, has that been run past the Gateway Board? Because that's awfully close to the noise contours, and I think there are restrictions on part 150 on schools inside that area.
Mayor, Councilmember, I'll have to check to see if it's actually been by the board. We have had discussions, I know, with the Gateway office about it, and they're going in there on a temporary basis so they can build a new facility as part of the SU campus area. So this has a 1.5-2 year time frame on it until they can build that new facility.
Can we get a letter from the from Gateway management on that? All right, thanks.
Okay, so that would and then page eight. And under items from citizens present, all the outgoing council can come back and talk to the... No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's go back to the study session. Item number two is hear an update, discuss and provide direction on the Pioneer Park locomotive.
Good morning, Mayor Hawker, council members. My name is Sherry Woodley, and I am an administrator with the Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Department. I'm here today because both Rhett Evans and Michael's here out of town, so you're stuck with me today. I'm here with Wally Burgess and Jared Smith, and they're with the Save the Train Committee, and we're here to answer any questions you might have regarding the status memo that was sent this week reporting that the train committee did make their goal of exceeding that $15,000.
Okay. Any questions or comments by council? I guess the big question is, so what next as far as time or duration or what? When do you get the other $400,000?
You want to address that, Jared?
Oh.
About the time frame?
Sure. I guess as far as the time frame goes, ultimately we'd like to shoot for 2012 in terms of restoration and location at the park, that being the centennial for the state of Arizona and also being the 100 years for the locomotive since it was built the same year Arizona became a state. So we definitely would, that would be the kind of ultimate time frame that we're looking at.
So does the money stay in escrow until 2012 to see, or 2011, whenever, until you get the $400,000? What's your game plan on this thing?
The money would be handled by the Parks Foundation. It would be deposited. We did go ahead and address that refund, non-refund situation. So there is a box on their form. If they do want their money refunded, if the train is not fully restored, we can refund that money and will refund that money. But at this point, I believe the plan is just to keep it in that escrow account, let it build any interest, and then when they're ready. I don't know if they've really addressed the fact that they may want to do some phased renovations or not. I think the plan is to gather all the money and then move forward.
Well, we've even considered the idea that looking at it, we get in-kind services, things like that, as we go through the project. And so that in-kind will also help to reduce from that overall number. But will certainly be contributed towards that total. So there, you know, I think we're looking to do it in a phased manner throughout the project, as recommended by the consultant who did the initial estimate for the city about a little over, I guess, about 2 years ago.
Okay, I'm a little unclear on what the next benchmark is outside of 2012, that date. So if the train is not restored and moved, then we sell it off or send it down to Chandler or something else if nothing progresses. I'm a little concerned about the in-kind. You make a platform for it up by Main Street or something else, and then you don't get enough money to move the whole thing forward. That gives me a little bit of concern.
We actually are at this time. There is one, at least one company has already expressed interest in helping us to move it. That's actually one of the first items in our plan. I mean, the overall plan has not been put together beyond looking at the recommendations that the consultant put forward, in addition to realizing that we need to move the train first. That's really our first main goal, because restoration really is not viable in its current location. So that's our main goal, is to get the locomotive moved.
Okay.
First of all.
But I would, if from a funding standpoint, if you come up with $50,000 or $20,000 or whatever it is, and you move it, and then you don't come up with the other $350,000 to renovate it, then somebody's out $50,000 in a contribution that doesn't go to the ultimate goal of having this train there and staying there permanently. So I would like to see some type of a plan that lays it out.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
It's okay. Go ahead.
We weren't asked to create a detailed plan yet beyond what the consultant had put together. So if we're certainly happy to work with council, city staff, whoever we need to lay down a specific timeline, that type of thing, and in terms of what we would like to see happen ideally. So we haven't put anything down that specific. We just know what our goals are immediately, and as well as the phase plan put together by the consultant.
Well, I would say that you came up with the $15,000, so I'm willing to say that you got a reprieve. But the next challenge then is to say, how do we get from here to moving it, restoring it, and what benchmarks, so that if it doesn't happen, the council takes another action and disposes of the train in another manner. So that would, what I would consider is the next logical step. Congratulations on getting to this point, and that's what I would say, in my opinion, would be the next step. And the next council can deal with it as you bring back some type of proposal. So that would be my recommendation.
Mayor Hawker, one of the things that was discussed at the last committee meeting was that the team was so focused on just raising that money that they really didn't have the time to put the plan together. And they had hoped to work on that at this point and then come back in 6 months and present progress to the council and perhaps six-month intervals or quarterly intervals.
Okay. Kyle.
Again, you met the criteria that would prevent from pulling the plug, and I congratulate you on that. And I propose that we just give a six-month extension to come back, present to the council. I'll be here then, and we'll see what kind of a plan you come up with and how the progress is going. So I just propose we do that and move on today.
Okay, Tom?
And just two questions. How many donors are involved in the 17,903?
Do you have any idea? I don't have a count on the absolute number. You do have a substantial donor there. You have a lot of small piecemeal donations as well. We're getting a lot of donations in through the foundation that are like $10 and $15 and $20 donations.
How big was the substantial donor?
$15,000.
See, when we talked about this last time, this was a community thing, a broad-based thing, and $15,000 out of 17.9 doesn't represent to me a broad base. It represents one person who's willing to put $15,000 in, but I'm not going to suggest that we pull the plug, but I will tell you that I don't want the train moved until you've got all the money to do it, and I don't think moving it up front is going to enhance your support for it. That isn't where it was. I don't want that to be the focal point of the front of Pioneer Park, but you haven't done what I've said, but you reached the goal, so I'll go along with the 6 month. But yeah,
two prominent people that I know of donated to me personally for it $1,000 and another one $500.
Okay,
and that engine hasn't been seen enough where it's located. That's a very poor place for having it. I'm a railroad man's son. I was raised on Santa Fe Railroad. I've lived on the railroad all my life. I went off to war in World War II. So I know about railroads. In fact, I've got a bunch of past passes over there by my model railroad there that my father and mother had when I was a boy growing up. There's lots of towns in Arizona that would not have schools if it wasn't for the railroad. Lots of them. And I'm one person that says that engine that we have in that park is a vintage point for this city and for this whole valley. We need to keep it, not let somebody else take it away from us, because it has a great history behind it. There's a great nostalgia behind that engine right there. I was working on the Southern Pacific when it was given to the city of Mesa. I was a locomotive fireman and engineer out of Phoenix. And I know about that engine, and I know about a lot of them just like it. It is something we should try to keep, because the history behind it is tremendous. And I mean that sincerely.
I can tell you do, sir, and I appreciate that very much. What I'm saying is that my concept of what was going to happen here was a broad base of community support. You now tell me that three people have contributed $16,500 out of the total of $17,900. That's not a broad base of community support in my mind. However, you met the goal of 15,000. I'm not going to pull the plug, but I don't think, I'm really concerned that you're never going to raise the 400,000 total. And by moving it and spending any of the money now, and do we know how much it would cost to move it, even with the help of this company that has said they'd like to help?
We don't, Councilman Rawls, we don't have that estimate at this time, but that's something that we'll certainly be looking into, and that we'd love to be able to add to our total as an in-kind donation if it works out that way.
Sure. I'm concerned about moving it up front, putting it right on Main Street, and then not having the money come in. And we've now spent some of the money, as the mayor said, for that purpose. Plus, we now have a totally different look for the front of Pioneer Park that may not be permanent. So, again, I'm not going to be here. I don't have a problem with the six-month extension recommended by Kyle, but I did want to get answers to those two questions, and I appreciate it, sir. And I appreciate your sentiments, appreciate your enthusiasm for the railroads and their what they did to this state. That's not the only issue at play in decisions like this by the council, though, but I do appreciate what you brought to the table.
I did have two, Max Cox and Linda Abbott also were in support of Pioneer Train, so this is a study session, so we're really not taking...
A little less formal?
No. Or not at all.
Do you not want the 6 month extension? You can talk to that if you'd like.
I think a 6 month extension is nice. The nice thing about this last extension, or the little month extension we had, it created a deadline and gave us a goal to hit, and then people rallied behind that. Well, a few people really came through for us and helped us meet that deadline, which is really nice. But the main thing we wanted to do is get at least 2 years out of this. Most people I talk to, they say, is the train still there? They played on it, and they as kids, and they wonder why isn't it more visible, or why is it blocked off to keep from playing on right now?
I think our suggestion is to give you a 6 month extension, come back with a plan. If you can convince the other council it's a good idea to move it, it's a good idea to fund it, go ahead. But this council is saying you met the objective of the $15,000.
Right.
We're giving you 6 months.
Right.
So if you've got some other issues, I'd suggest you work them out and bring them back within the 6 months.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that we do have a little bit of a plan here. To even raise some type of funds, we had to tell people where we're going with this. And that's on this project, the Pioneer Park train relocation project or display project.
Okay.
It kind of gives us an idea where we want to see the train go and how it wants to be, how we feel like it needs to be presented in the front of the park, to be able to generate more interest, to be able to get this the rest of this project going. $400,000 is a lot of money. And I think we can probably get it up there in the front for less than that. And then as we go on, do staged restorations, maybe even focus on restoring the tender first, and then moving the big tent up to the front and covering the front of the train up and doing that, the asbestos and all the other things that need to go with that. In another restoration.
Again, I don't think we need this conversation unless you don't want the 6 months extension. All we're going to give you today is a 6 months extension.
Okay.
I think that's the sentiment. So I'd come back with your plan and.
We appreciate all that you guys do and all the time that you put in for our city and.
Okay, because I think there'll be some real issues on whether that's the appropriate location for a locomotive too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another statue out there in front that has some prominence now, and so you're going to have to put it on one side or the other or move
it. It's going to go way to the west side of the engine there. In fact, we did a little photo restoration thing of the park and how we feel that it might look when we're all done.
Okay. I just don't want it to have money invested and then not have the thing completed with a concurrence from a council that can see the whole scope of the project. So that's why the 6 months.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to thank the council for allowing a citizens committee. I recognize that in a tight budget when money has to be cut, an engine behind a fence is not something that's going to have dollars thrown at it. So I do appreciate the opportunity that you allowed the citizens of Mesa, and I do believe we have a broader base of support than what has been represented. We have a petition online. We've had international signatures coming in from people who remember this train. Our former Attorney General Grant Woods grew up here, and he signed our petition. I don't know how many people are giving money or what the amounts are, because that's not my focus. I don't really care who they are. But I do know we've had a lot of positive comments about restoring our train. And it would be great if we knew 1,000 people who could write checks for $350. I'm not sure I know 100 who could in this economic time right now. They're putting it in their gas tanks. And I do think that we're going to research all funding methods, including grants. We recognize there are strings that are attached to federal grants, but there are a lot of grants for which we qualify for, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't investigate any funding source, and we believe we can get the money, and we believe it will cost less than $400,000 for us to move the train and get it restored.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
In your cause.
Thanks.
All right, there is a here to discuss and provide direction. I'm hearing 6 months, bring back a work program. All right. Anyone disagree with that? All right. Number three is hear an update, discuss and provide direction on immigration issues.
Good morning, Mayor and Council.
I'm sure
Chief, if Chief Gascon is here.
Good morning, Mayor. And Chief Gascon can certainly jump in anytime. What the information I provide you was really just a timeline of the letter and correspondence that the city's had, including the Chief's official request to the Department of Homeland Security. We did check back in yesterday, and currently at this point, they have not made a final decision about the current round of grants. They're expecting it any day now, but that decision has not yet been made. So we'll certainly update council as soon as we know something. I don't know if Chief has anything to add to that.
No, we have been in contact with ICE. We have complied with all their requests for information. Funding has not been allocated at this point, and we're just pending a reply from ICE.
Okay, I do have a letter dated May 12th that wasn't in the packet from Congressman Mitchell in support of the funding request, too, so I appreciate his support.
Absolutely. And in addition, I know we haven't been able to confirm whether a letter has been submitted, but Senator Kyle and Congressman Flake have also expressed some interest in helping make our case to Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. The reason I wanted to bring this back is there were some bills through the Arizona House that would have required or at least enabled, and I'm not quite sure what, maybe you've got more information on the bill, and I believe the governor vetoed that, saying that you don't need this bill because you can go ahead and apply for a 287G program. Well, we have, and I think it's been January of 07 is when we made our decision to move forward, so we're 6 months into this, and we haven't even heard anything back yet.
Yeah, I think the governor also, one of her concerns was the unfunded liability. That particular bill required the state to pay for it, and she recognized that this could be in many millions of dollars because the way the bill was written, it would not put the liability on the cities. And this is very expensive. You know, we're going to be sending basically 10 people to the Carolinas. Each of them will be gone for about 4 weeks. It's true, you know, Homeland Security will pay for the training, but we still got to pay for labor costs. So you can see a mandatory requirement statewide that is not funded by the state would place a tremendous liability on the cities. So what the governor, what this particular bill required the state to pay for it, and she recognized that would be a tremendous liability to the state.
What is our cost recovery is anticipated as far as speedier processing so that we don't have illegals that are detained by us if we have ICE capabilities at the jail system to.
I don't think there will be any cost recovery, Mayor. It's not going to expedite the time that ICE is going to pick up the people. It's going to facilitate our ability to assess beyond a self-admission at our jail whether somebody's here illegally or not. Sometimes today we may have a difficulty doing so, but once the person has been identified, they will be deported at the timeline that ICE sets up to do. Our concern is we still want to make sure that people that are arrested for local charges are face the consequences of the local charges. We don't want to get into a situation like we often see where we have people that get deported too quickly, only to come back very quickly to reoffend. And sometimes, quite frankly, we've had scenarios where we've had very serious investigation. We've had people under surveillance that have been deported by another agency, broken our surveillance, and then several weeks back we find the same individuals reoffending through forensic evidence, and our investigation has to start all over again. So we have to be very careful as to how quickly we deport people that are here committing predatory crimes. We got to make sure that the local consequences are handled before we deport people, because the reality is that those people that are committing crimes here and are criminally connected find it very easy to get back.
Okay, so an update to the new council in 3 months?
Absolutely. We certainly can, Mayor, and we're hoping they initially DHS had set a deadline of the end of May, so we may know something in the next few days, and certainly we'll update this council if we do hear anything prior to June the 2nd.
Is it possible to get the list of cities that are requesting to be 287G funded?
We can certainly ask for that.
I think we had a staff report. Is there 40 or 90 requests in or something?
There were several. I know the chief may have more direct information. The state line article that I attached to your information, I thought, was very telling about the magnitude of requests that DHS has received in the last several years.
Yeah, and I think that is the problem. They're trying to come up with a national training center in order to handle the nationwide request, and funding has been the problem for them.
Okay. The only other problem I can see is if the federal government never comprehensively addresses immigration, then this federal training center might be a way to shift it down to the local level in some manner inadvertently and not do their job.
If the federal government doesn't deal with this, we're going to be increasingly having more and more difficulties with this issue.
Okay. All right. Vice Mayor.
Thanks, Mayor. This is the last time I get to talk about this, so I'm going to talk for a minute about it. I want to make that point again that Chief Gascon made, which is that simply deporting people who are violent criminals does not take care of the problem, because they turn around, they're back over the border within a couple of days, they're committing crimes again, now we don't know where they are. These people need to be put in prison, and they need to be put in prison for a long time. You know, we have crimes that are the most serious of crimes, and I really think that when we just focus on only deporting people, that we miss this important element of things, which is that these people need to be incarcerated. So I appreciate your making that point, Chief. Sometimes we think that we've solved the problem just by shipping somebody across the border. I think Representative Nelson, who had the bill that was vetoed by the governor, was trying to address this issue of our wanting training and not trying to put it back. I really admire the fact that he did not try to put the cost back on the cities. And what the governor said was, in these budget times, I can't justify a new expense, basically. But in terms of the federal government, what I would ask is, if we have the support of our senators and the support of our congressmen, then let's ask them to run a bill that funds this. Because it's nice to have a letter, but what we really need is the funding. And Mayor, I agree with you. I think that the challenge here is, if the federal government sees our local police departments as the solution, then it becomes a completely unfunded mandate. I mean, even if they provide 287G training, it becomes a completely unfunded mandate, and it creates this horrible situation where the police operate in dual roles, where they're going in and they're trying to solve crimes, and witnesses to crimes or victims of crimes are intimidated by the fact that the very police who are now charged with the enforcement of the immigration laws are there in another capacity. And so, you know, I will say, I will quote my friend Dr. Deb Duval one more time. There is a simple solution to every problem, and it's usually wrong. And these are complex, and it's a simple solution to every complex problem. I mangled it, Deb. There's a simple solution to every complex problem, and it's usually wrong. This is a very complex problem. There aren't simple solutions, and when we act as if there are, then we miss the boat. So thank you, Chief, for your work on this, for your ongoing work, and for the efforts that you and your department have made to really address the crime issues, and you have really done that very well. I would encourage you to keep on doing that. Keep on reporting people who are here illegally, calling in ICE, doing all of those things, working in concert. And also, my thanks to the mayor for keeping this on the front burner, because you have. Thank you.
Sure. Kyle, did you have comments? Okay. Tom.
Very briefly on a related topic, Chief, this is my last public meeting, and I just wanted to thank you for the work you've done since you've got here. I think you've done a tremendous job in bringing the Mesa Police Department forward into the century, and I'm just really happy that you're here, and I wish you the best as you continue to serve Mesa.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, any other questions or comments? All right, thanks for the update.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Item number four is acknowledging receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Have two. Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. They are acknowledged. Two reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Anyone have any updates? Scott.
Mayor, I don't have a meeting per se, but I will bring up the fact that I did what George Bush asked, and I took my refund check, bought a new car, and I bought it in Mesa. So, highly recommend that.
Okay, my mileage did you get, Scott?
31 miles highway, 25 city. It's not too bad. Oh, I don't get to drive it. My wife does.
The president was in town a couple of days ago and visited a Mesa business, Silverado Cable. Had the opportunity to be one of the people that greeted them there. That's a... They are benefiting from the economic stimulus package there. They do harnesses for some of the high-tech aircraft that are up there flying around and have a very, very high success ratio of harnesses that go out of that plant with no defects. So it's a very impressive business, and it's a local Mesa business. Appreciate all the support that the police department gave to and the motorcade getting it in and out. It was an impressive operation and went very smoothly. So thank you for that. Vice Mayor.
Several of us, Mayor, including you leading the charge there, were attended the groundbreaking yesterday for the new Mesa Court building. And that's exciting that we were able to do that. We had the incoming mayor and one of our incoming council members there as we're kind of continuing to pass the torch on a variety of things. I've had a number of meetings this last week, and I'm not going to report on them except to say this to, actually I'm looking over here at Chris Brady. How are you doing, Debbie? That one of the topics that's come up in several of the meetings that I've been in this last week is the impact of the gas prices on workers and, you know, the whole and how we're going to address that. And one of the things that I'm hoping the city is going to look at is the possibility of things like going to 410s for people who can flex to 410s. Or do telecommuting 1 or 2 days a week for those for whom that works, because this has really gotten to be quite a challenge. I don't know if anybody else filled their gas tank this week, but it was. I took out a small loan. I'm going to have to go back on the payday loan thing. No, I'm just kidding about that. But that was for your benefit, Tom. But it really is significant, and so I hope the city's going to look at those possibilities. I think that one of our neighboring communities is actually putting everybody on 4 9.5s, is what I had heard.
Vice Mayor, I think that's accurate. We currently do have both a telecommuting policy as well as some flexible schedules, but it certainly is an opportunity to revisit and see if we can strengthen our program.
Thank you.
I did attend a MAG meeting last night, too. There was some discussion, 287G request out by the Fort McDowell out on the Beeline Highway. It was a 11-5 recommendation for denial. It's about 5,000 acres from the technical committee. This is one that Don Stapley has been actively involved with. It's an Elman project, actually. And they are trying to do a small plant, wastewater treatment plant out there. There is some concern by Salt River Project and the Salt River Pima Maricopa and Fort McDowell Indian reservations that there could be some, because of the injection well technology, some contaminants that couldn't get into the Verde watershed, which is part of our water source. So it did pass. It has several other hurdles to go through as it moves up the chain. I voted against it on the grounds that I thought the groundwater pumping out of the Verde watershed was still not determined if it was a separate watershed or not. And an issue that's not a 208 permitted discussion item, but that had to do with the transportation. I asked what they were going to do if they had the density out there, and they indicated that they were going to have a deceleration lane on Beeline Highway to take care of any additional capacity constraints that might be developed. And I thought a deceleration lane doesn't help the capacity of a roadway. So it's not a criteria, but it was a MAG project, and so I did vote against it. It did pass, so that's one we will need to track with our water department to make sure that our concerns are raised as it goes up through ADEQ and some of the other departments it has to face.
How big is that community?
The community is about 1,000 residents. Yeah. And the other issue to it had to do with the liability. It's a county improvement district, so the improvement district has the ability to put a levy on the households for any problems. So the developer builds it, turns it over to the county improvement district, which the Board of Supervisors sets as the governing body. But the governing body is not pledging the county's full faith and credit in any manner. It goes back to the improvement district. So if the improvement district for some reason can't come up with that type of money to make improvements for an injection well technology, which is Scottsdale has had some problems with it. You have to do, you know, a whole bunch of stuff as far as microns and the water quality so that it doesn't plug up your injection well. And then do you have a backup well or two of injection wells in case one plugs and for maintenance? Anyway, so the financial possibility of a development with an improvement district with 1,000 homes hooked up to it was a concern for a small plant, because if it fails, it could then affect the Verde. If it's a small plant out in someplace else, you know, you got a smelly mess someplace, but if it fails in that location, it had some negative impacts. And for those reasons, I voted against it last night. Just if you hear about it or read about it or hear from our supervisor that Mesa didn't support it, that's the grounds for non-support. Any others? Vice Mayor.
You reminded me, Mayor, of one other one that I needed to report, which is I was at the Arizona League of Cities and Towns Executive Committee meeting. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to report that the feedback we're hearing from the legislature has actually been very positive towards the cities and towns, in the sense that they're impressed with the fact that we recognize the downturn in the economy and we have made cuts to our budgets to address that. And so right now, they have been pretty favorable towards not cutting state shared revenue. But I just want to caution everybody, particularly the incoming council members, that I think as things get tough and as the discussion continues on regarding, because they solved the budget problems ending June 30 of this year. As far as I can tell, they haven't made any progress on the budget that starts on July 1. And so I think we're going to have to maintain that vigilance in talking to our legislators. And we have made cuts, as everyone knows. We address those issues immediately. And so it was very nice to hear that they recognized that the cities and towns of Arizona have stepped up and said, okay, we don't have the money, we cut back. So I wanted to report that to all of you.
Okay. Next item is scheduling of meetings and general information. Deb?
Mayor and Council, just a couple items. This afternoon, 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the Mesa Convention Center, Palo Verde Room, will be the Mayor and Council farewell reception, of which several of you are our guest of honor, so we'll see you there. And then on Monday, June 2nd, both the study session and City Council meeting.
Okay. Can we orchestrate that for the study session so the new council goes through the agenda? Because it will be their agenda.
Yeah, we'll work to set that up.
Right, if we even move to the front row or something, just let them take care of that. Tom?
I was just wondering if I could take everything off the consent agenda for Monday night.
Just start filling out blue cards right now.
Richards is making a face at you.
Yeah. Actually, some of those increases you voted against in subcommittee, so you're justified in doing so. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay, then items from citizens present or no request?
No additional requests, ma'am.
All right. Then let's go ahead and adjourn the study session.
And
all right. Motion second to adjourn the study session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, then I need to call a special council meeting to order. And so this is the special council meeting of Thursday, May 29th, 2008. We have two items. The first is to take action on the following resolutions, and that's canvassing, declaring, and adopting the rules of the results of the general election held on May 20th, 2008.
Move for approval.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second for approval. That will confirm that Scott Smith was elected mayor and Dina Higgins was elected council member, District 5. I have a motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Item number B on that is approving the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan. I do have some requests to speak, but why don't we go ahead and let's see. I think there was, is there a procedure here to move forward on this? Does staff want to start this out? Do we have the consultant?
Yes.
What's consultant?
Mayor, we do have a presentation. The consultant's going to lead, and staff will be present to answer any questions, so we can go from there to
okay.
any citizen comments.
All right. If the consultant wants to come forward, then. Tom?
If I could ask a question first, Mayor, before we get started.
Sure.
John, as I understand it, this matter has been referred to Planning and Zoning Commission. They then continued it and have not yet made a recommendation. Is that correct?
Mayor Councilman Rawls, that is correct. They continued to their June meeting.
Right, and I understand that we referred that to them because that's sort of the policy and procedure that we have in place for these type of things.
That is correct.
City Attorney has opined that we can consider and either adopt or reject or modify or whatever we want to do on this without having that recommendation.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, that's correct. Certain things have to come before the council with a recommendation by state statute. This is not one of those. If it were a formal amendment to the general plan, it would have to have a recommendation from planning and zoning, but this is not a regulatory document.
But it is one that we refer to the Planning and Zoning Commission pursuant to the policies and procedures that we of the council have adopted and used in the past.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, staff following the standard procedure took it to Planning and Zoning Board. I don't know if we could say that the council directed us to do that.
No, I don't mean directed you on this particular case, but it was based upon prior experience that the council has employed. You took it to the Planning and Zoning right. Commission. Okay, I'm just going to tell you, we're rushing to judgment on several things here. The thing that distinguishes this country, in my mind, from the barbarous nations of the past and the tyrannical nations of the present is the adherence to the rule of law. And that when a government makes rules and regulations and policies and procedures, it ought to follow them. When it doesn't, it not only plants, but it waters and it fertilizes the seeds of tyranny. I'm not interested in doing that. I think once we decide that our input, that we are more important, that these individuals who sit at this council level are more important than the rules and regulations and policies and procedures that we have put in place to ensure citizen input, to ensure the buy-in of the public, we ought to adhere to them. So I'm going to make a motion that we continue this matter until after the Planning and Zoning Commission has the opportunity to complete its work and make its recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Motion and second to continue. Discussion. Vice Mayor.
You know, I think that the assumption in that is that there is only one possible outcome, which is that we vote either to approve it or to not approve it. And I see this as an opportunity for us also to give input and suggest modifications. I think that your motion is premature because I think that we have an opportunity to, I have some suggestions for things that I think might be included, but that doesn't mean that it has to be adopted. This is an opportunity for us to give input on this whole thing that we have been working on for a very long time. In addition, you know, I could, and by the way, I don't think the Planning and Zoning Board did this, but conceivably you could have a situation where a board or commission of the city hijacks the ability of the council to do something. And I don't think that's an anticipated outcome either. So I think that we ought to have some discussion here. I think we ought to hear from the people who came. I think we have an opportunity for another set of input here this morning. And so I'm not going to vote in favor of the motion, but I'm not telling you that I'm voting to support the plan, to not continue it on, to any of those things. I'm here to hear this morning and hopefully to give some input based on all the things that I've read and heard over the course of the last year plus.
Tom?
If I can just respond, the item on the agenda is approving. That's how it's described. It doesn't mean we have to, but it isn't to give further direction to the consultants. It's to approve. To me, that means this is the decision time, and I think that the decision time now, if anything, is premature. Not the motion to continue, but passing on this. And I understand why we're doing it, and I appreciate the concerns about a commission hijacking it, and if that's the case, then I would think that that the council have the right to override that and act if they didn't act in a responsible and timely manner. That's not the issue here. The issue here is whether or not these seven people, or more specifically, five of these seven people, get to weigh in on this before the Planning and Zoning Commission has followed and had the opportunity to follow the policies and procedures that have been set by this council and utilized over the years. So that's my objection, and I will tell you that if the motion is denied and we move to a approval of this, consideration of approval, Debbie, you get to decide what that charter provision means about forfeiting your right in office, because I will not participate. I have a conflict of interest between my conscience and this action.
Let me weigh in on this. The study of the 32 square miles has been going on for a long time, and it was initiated with this council trying to figure out how we map out the area with Levine and DMB and the Gateway Freeway, all of the changes that took place. So we initiated and budgeted out money so that we could have a study that took place with this council. I think it would be improper to not come to a conclusion if this is the council that did all that work and wanted to get some type of a plan in place for the city of Mesa to know kind of what the general parameters were for this area. So for me, we did seven other different, I think there's six or seven, the Citrus comes to mind, there's sub-area regional plans. And this is a regional plan, in my opinion, that's focused around Gateway Airport, the Levine and DMB properties, the ASU Polytechnic, and a freeway that's going to go right through the middle of that land out there. It's got a tremendous amount of opportunity, and I thought it needed to be studied. We studied it. I think we need to come to some conclusion on whether we concur with the studies or not. And it's approving the Mesa Gateway. There's several alternatives. There's an alternative A. There's an alternative B. There may be a C that comes forward today with input from this council. So to not have input from this council after all that work and to have a fresh council say, gee, we probably ought to go out and have five or six more public hearings or something else because we're not as familiar with it as the old council was. I think it's irresponsible for us not to finish our work and come to a conclusion on that 32 square miles. So it did go to PNZ. PNZ didn't take an action. They had the opportunity. So to delay it, what, then we have to delay it because they didn't take an action? That makes no sense to me. So I think it's the responsibility of this council to do an action on this and provide some direction. Mike?
And Tom? I think you just explained why I seconded Mr. Rawls' motion. It's not for all the same reasons that he enumerated. I feel that the Planning and Zoning Board should make a decision on this, and I think they asked for more time to get more testimony before them from the landowners in the area. I realize that we've done a tremendous job of outreach. I think you well documented the outreach, and those that say they have not been contacted perhaps weren't paying attention. But what I think is that it's very, very important for this process to work out. Mayor, I think our input is well on the record. I think our input is there through the meetings that we've had for the last 2.5 years and the very contentious votes that we've had to protect that airport. I think everybody on this council is fully aware that we want to protect the airport, as do the landowners. It's their future. And this morning I received a letter from the Arizona State Land Department, who is the primary landholder in a very, very important portion of this west of Ellsworth Road, and they're asking for a continuance. I just think that we can provide our input this morning, but I'm going to support Tom, if you want to wait your motion, I'll be happy to do that. But I don't want to make a decision on this morning. I'm going to vote no. I want to move it forward with the history that we've provided so that this new council can have all the input in the world to make this decision. To move forward today just smells of hurriedness, and I don't like to govern that way.
No. Yeah, and if the Planning and Zoning Commission had made its recommendation by today, I would not be making this motion. And so we would have had not only all the 2.5 years of input, we would have had the opportunity to vote up or down. But, you know, I've passed, or I shouldn't say passed, the council that I sat on, I voted no, approved a Falcon Field sub-area plan that was started by a prior council.
I believe I participated in, although I voted no, on a citrus area plan that was started by a prior council. So what we're doing here today is we're saying, and there's no other way of saying it, we're saying that the five of us are more important than the process. We have to have our say because of who we are, and by God, we're going to do it. We don't care who we trample. You know, we're not just moving colors around on a map here. We're dealing with people's property rights. And let's at least let the full-blown process have its say before we do that. Now, we have input. If you want to have the discussion today and provide input and all that stuff, I don't have any problem with that. Mike, I'd be happy to delay the vote on the motion to continue until you do that. But if it gets to the point where we're talking about approving or disapproving any option, any alternative, without a recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission, I think... hurriedness was the word you used?
That's not, not
yeah,
a
no, that's
word.
Not a word, but you know, I think it I think it reflects an elevation of the individual desire to have a final vote above the rule of law, and that's what I cannot and will not participate in.
Vice Mayor.
Ms. Spinner, Mr. Rawls talked about the way this is posted. And it posted for approval. Is there anything that prevents what I was talking about, which is our giving, you know, I've spent a lot of time on this, and I have some things that I think that should be suggested. And I'm going to make some other comments, too, because I have a little bit different take on this than, but can you just comment on that one first?
Yes, Mayor, Vice Mayor, as posted, this gives the council the opportunity to take action on either approve or disapprove the plan as it is. The council can also make modifications to it today if it chooses to, because it is a resolution. So changes can be made. Also, council can give direction. If you're not prepared to make a final decision, yes or no, but you want to send the staff back with direction to make modifications and bring it back to the next council, you can do that as well.
So one of the possible outcomes is that I can go through and say, you know, I saw this that I thought, I got letters from a lot of people. I saw this. I thought that was a good recommendation. I've also thought about this. I also have something that I think should be included that I've written up that I think should be included in this sub-area plan. So all of those things could take place, and you could still have the conclusion of it's being continued to the next council to make the ultimate decision on it.
That's correct.
Okay. Or referred back to planning and zoning. And I will tell you that, and you know, I'm usually, I know I can be blunt, but I'm going to be a little more blunt than I usually am. I think that there is a certain amount of council shopping that's going on here as well. And that part of things disturbs me. Council shopping disturbs me. Because when I'm looking at some of the things that are being protested, and I look at the original general plan and the way things exist in the general plan today, we could walk away and say, you know what, throw out the sub-area plan. We don't need a sub-area plan. We're just going to stick with a general plan that passed by the voters however, you know, many years ago, and walk away from it. And believe me, I don't think the city will be as well off, nor will the majority of the property owners be as well off. But some of the people who are most distressed, I think, will be in exactly the same place as they would be were we to approve Plan B. So I'm just laying my cards on the table. I think that there is a certain amount of that, and I don't think that that's how it should be either. I know that this council, when I say this council, I'm sorry, a couple of us who were here at the beginning made some mistakes at the beginning of our service regarding zoning near Gateway Airport, and we had to go back and undo those things, and it was a really difficult thing to undo those things. And I don't even know today if you could, because of the passage of Prop 207. And it was not an easy thing. And I think that there is some, sometimes there are some people, and I'm not saying anyone here falls in that category, but sometimes there is a desire to take advantage of naivete and experience, and I just don't want to see that happen either. So I want the opportunity to share some of my wisdom in this plan, and that's why I said I thought your motion was premature, Tom.
I didn't know whether you meant premature in the context of the meeting or premature in some other way, and as I've already said, I'm more than happy to have the discussion, and I'll let my motion hang in abeyance until after the discussion. But if there were to be another motion to approve at some point, then I would want my motion to be considered first.
But yeah, I'm more than happy to have the discussion, the input, the opportunity to modify whatever you'd like to do. And maybe it is appropriate when we get to the motion itself that it be a motion to refer it back to the planning and zoning, because I think they've already have a meeting scheduled to consider it, don't they? So I'm not sure what the appropriate language is at this moment, but I'm more than happy to keep it in abeyance, Claudia.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second to refer back to P&Z. All right, and so we'll go ahead and continue with the discussion and reconsider that motion.
Yes.
All right. Any other discussion on it? All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, Mark McLaren with HDR, project manager for the development of the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan. I'd like to give you a brief overview this morning of the plan as it has been presented to you and the alternative that is on the table as well. Just by way of quick overview, and I know some information that was provided to you early in the week in response to some concerns that were raised, this process has had a significant public outreach process related to it, including the collection of over 8,600 addresses of property owners within the study area and the surrounding area who were notified at appropriate times of some of the opportunities to provide input, as well as a number of other means that were used for distributing information about opportunities for public input into this process. A couple of the key opportunities that we provided throughout this, you will recall last October, we held a visioning session here at the Mesa Convention Center with Dr. Jack Casarda from North Carolina, who talked to us about the role of an airport in the city and the growing idea of the Aerotropolis as the city becoming that focal point of a new city. We also then in December held a two-day workshop out at the ASU Polytechnic campus. Several of you participated in, and a number of others, opportunity to see the various alternatives that were being developed and time to roll up the shirt sleeves and put pen to paper and providing comments and feedback to the various alternatives that were under consideration. There was also an open house here in Mesa about a week and a half ago, where both alternatives A and alternative B were presented to the public. Throughout this process, we've held several meetings with our PAC and SAC, our stakeholders and political action committees, or policy action committees, their advisory committee, excuse me, to provide input from state, local agencies of not only property adjacent to, but within the study area, as well as some of the property owners and developers with interests in the property as well. And also throughout this process, there have been a couple of opportunities for the East Valley Partnership has given input and provided opportunity for us to talk about this planning process and what it means to the East Valley. This is a list of the organizations, companies, agencies that were represented on the PAC and SAC committees throughout this process. And to give you an idea, just in the context of the 32 square mile area study area, what you see shaded in yellow here is the land area within that study area that was represented by those who were invited to participate as a part of the PAC and SAC process. Throughout this process, both with the general public through the opportunities they've had, as well as our visioning session and our PAC and SAC committees, we had established a vision for what we wanted to achieve in the development of the plan for this area. It's a vision statement that we have shared with you before. And more importantly, we had also identified a couple of key goals for this gateway area that we wanted to focus on throughout the planning process. Obviously, we've talked about the importance of protecting and promoting the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, as it is a significant catalyst to the opportunities that exist in this area, understanding that there's an opportunity to grow not only commercial passenger service, but also complementing cargo activities. You gave us the challenge early on of being able to create at least 100,000 high-wage, high-value jobs by 2030 as a part of this planning process, while understanding the need to have a financially sustainable area as it continues to grow. We've also heard throughout this process and through the discussion that we had with all of you last week at Decision Theater, talked about the work that we've done to understand and address concerns related to safety, height, and sound within the study areas, understanding the aircraft flight paths, particularly the departures out of the airport to the northeast,
understanding the height constraints and the things that we need to understand in terms of safety procedures and the operation of the airport, and also understanding the sound readings, what the sound contours mean as it relates to the planning of the airport and the areas around it as various types of aircraft depart from the airport. We have developed a plan that is in two pieces. The first, we refer to the framework plan, which essentially identifies the character that we have envisioned within the various areas of the planning, total 32 square mile area, understanding the need to provide, for example, in the case of the mixed-use community, that area primarily encompassing the proving grounds, the opportunity for mixed-use development within the PCD that they have discussed with you previously, identifying areas of urban mixed use with a greater emphasis on business parks and light industrial activities that would be appropriate there, identifying along the freeway corridors the areas where we felt that residential, and particularly single-family residential, are not appropriate is one of the things that we've heard from a number of you and other stakeholders, and then identifying the area, obviously, that is the airport itself and the airport district, and also the campus district in that area that encompasses principally the ASU Polytechnic campus and the plans that they have for the growth of that area. We have, at this point, as we mentioned earlier, two plans, Alternative A and Alternative B. Alternative A is the plan that we had presented to you when we were back here in March that identifies a mix of uses throughout the area. The principal difference between the two plans that we have before you this morning is what is occurring with inside the loop of 202, so essentially that northwest quadrant of the study area. You will see that in Alternative A, just on the south side of Elliott Road, we have several areas of high-density residential that was identified and with input from some of our stakeholders felt was an appropriate location to ensure a good mix of housing types within the entire study area, but also provide some appropriate housing to go with the business park and other opportunities that would be within that corridor along Elliott Road. The second plan that we have before you this morning, Alternative B, provides the principal difference of not having any residential use inside the Loop 202. Again, in response to the input from other stakeholders involved in this process and respective of their desire to prohibit residential uses within that area. In brief summary, in comparison of the two plans, when we look at what they have the ability to achieve by 2030, they're pretty even in terms of what they can attain in terms of job growth. The significant difference being that with the greater amount of industrial land that is provided in Alternative B, the growth beyond 2030, the timeline through which it takes to absorb all this land becomes significantly longer. Alternative A also provides a better jobs housing balance in that it has 10,000 more dwelling units than provided in Alternative B. In the evaluation of the transportation networks that we've done for this planning process, that better jobs housing balance results in less traffic impact to the surrounding area because we've internalized more trips with people who have opportunities to live and work within the study area. And finally, that discussion as well of jobs housing balance having more rooftops within the city of Mesa gives us the ability to also have stronger tax revenue growth in supporting the retail opportunities that are a part of the plan. Alternative B, as I mentioned earlier, the principal difference of prohibiting residential in that northwest section is with the intent of providing the greatest level of protection to the airport operations. As we've gone through this process and met with the policy advisory and stakeholder advisory committees in reviewing these two plans, this is just a brief summary of their feelings on those two alternatives, Alternative A and Alternative B. There were some very specific comments on some colors changing on the map that some of the property owners and others would like to discuss, and I'm sure that you have received and will hear some of that input this morning. We've also had additional public input as we've gone through this process. Just to summarize a couple of key things, again, that you'll hear more about this morning, there is that interest on the part of some to specifically identify a land use on a specific piece of property that they would like to see different from what is in the plan, be it Plan A or Plan B. There are a number of people who felt that urban living, that high-density residential inside the Loop 202 is important to support the area and provide the additional residents necessary to support the commercial and other opportunities. Similarly, we have other stakeholders who feel that protecting that area inside the 202 by prohibiting residential is important to maintaining the best situation for airport operations over time. And finally, we have a number of parties who've provided input on the ability to maintain flexibility to respond to future markets, in that wanting to make sure that this plan will have the ability to work with their ideas and their opportunities for development over time. Thank you.
A couple of questions on some of the plan comparisons.
What page is slide are you on?
Well, I'm back to the 2030 plan comparison. Page 7, yes. My biggest concern is that as I would prepare a plan, one of the things that I would do, and I know that you had a charge to do, was something regarding the fiscal impacts of these two plans and things like that. I don't think I've ever seen any of that information, or have we seen that information? I don't recall receiving any of that information. Remember, and wasn't that part of the things you were going to be doing, was looking at some of the other things that went along with this plan?
The evaluation that we did of the three alternatives that were compared as a part of our workshop in December
looked at... Which is different than A and B here. Was the A, B, C stuff that you had before.
Understand, Councilman, right. Mayor. We did an early fiscal impact to look at those three plans, to look at the trade-offs of each of those development patterns.
I remember that.
Okay. The development of these two plans, as we've been going through this process here, alternative A in the jobs housing balance is the one that is most consistent with the plan that we had evaluated back in December in terms of showing the least fiscal deficit in terms of operations and maintenance of utilities and things over time as it relates to the city. Alternative B, at this time, we have not gone through that entire process, for mainly because of the amount of time that we've had to respond to changes in that plan in its development over the last 30 days.
My next question then, you say longer time to absorb industrial land. Can you quantify that?
Our discussions with Elliott Pollock and Company in looking at the absorption of the types of lands that were identified within the two plans, they had set forth for us what they felt were achievable targets in terms of land absorption between now and 2030 for each of these alternatives. Because there is greater acreage of industrial and business park land, principally industrial land, within alternative B, they felt the horizon on which that would be absorbed would be longer.
5 years longer? 50 years longer?
Beyond 2030, that timeline is unknown.
Let me reword the question then. Do you think that alternative A and the recommendations of alternative A could be absorbed by 2030?
Under either of these scenarios, all of the industrial land is not absorbed by 2030.
Okay. How about the housing?
Elliott and Pollock Company feels that in both of these alternatives, the absorption of all of the residential land by 2030 is certainly possible given the growth that's forecast for the Southeast Valley. And so what you see represented in these two columns here in terms of the number of dwelling units is what would be absorbed, and that for the most part is the absorption of all the residential land within the plan by 2030.
I remember as we did our visioning process, the very first October meeting was like the Friday after I was appointed to the council. And I remember sitting there, and I remember distinctly Elliott Pollock's presentation. I don't know if the rest of us remember Elliott Pollock's presentation, but what did he say? He says jobs follow housing. And so I am a bit concerned. I understand the idea of protecting the airport, but as we get that balance out of kilter, I think it even, besides just a simple, this is how many acres a year I think we'll absorb of industrial land, I think we're getting that balance a little bit out of, possibly out of whack. Because I remember them, that little flow diagram that they have, and they says, you know, this is how things, this is how communities develop, and they say you build the housing and then the jobs. I don't know how much that, how that affects this Plan A versus Plan B comparison in your mind. That, I guess, is a long-winded question. Do you have an answer to that?
Obviously, Mayor, Council, jobs and retail follow rooftops. And one of the advantages when we looked at the fiscal impact of these plans back in December was balancing the expenditures that the city would realize with the revenues the city would realize from the services and the tax generation that would occur through the development and the build-out of each of these plans. So that number of housing units, dwelling units within the plan is an important number because it provides benefits back not only in terms of job growth, but also in terms of retail growth and what that means for revenue opportunities for the city and development.
And then my last question is, do you have a recommendation of alternative A versus alternative B?
Mayor, Council, I understand the input of the stakeholders and their input that they have provided to both of these plans, the emotions and the interests that they have in providing both of these. My job as the technician this morning is to provide you the summary of the two plans, the technical information. The decision is yours and not mine.
Every study,
I apologize.
No, I'm not going to let you off the hook here. Every study that I have ever prepared for ADOT or MCDOT or the City of Mesa, we submit a recommendation. Mm-hmm. We evaluate the data and we submit a recommendation. So I guess I'm looking for a recommendation, if not from you, from the staff.
Well, Mayor, Council, I guess I'll take the heat off the staff on that one.
Okay.
When we've gone through this process and with the input that we had achieved to date, the plan that best represents the significant stakeholder input that we had had in this process as our preferred alternative was alternative A.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go down this side. Tom?
Just one brief question. Alternative B, I think somebody mentioned, John, it may have been you at the Planning and Zoning Commission. Alternative B first surfaced to the public on May 9th. That's what the minutes suggest.
I guess I'm
looking for confirmation that that's
right. Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, it was late April, early May. I don't remember the exact date. If the minutes say 9th, maybe that is the correct date.
He's saying surfaced to the public. It might have surfaced to the study process late April, early May.
Right.
What's the name? Says, let's see who said it. Mr. Wesley responded that alternative A has been available since March, and alternative B just came out on Friday, May 9, 2008.
Councilmember Rawls,
planning and zoning, is that right?
Yes, and to clarify, the public distribution of that plan was initially done on May the 9th in preparation for the Planning and Zoning Board meeting, which occurred the following week.
Okay, and the Planning and Zoning met on the 15th, so there was 6 days for the public to provide comment on plan or alternative B.
Right.
And much of the discussion during the Planning and Zoning Committee from the public was we really haven't had time to digest Plan B or alternative B. Correct? John, record can't get the shakes of the head.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I wanted.
Scott?
Thank you, Mayor. In response to a couple of things I've heard, first of all, I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea of choosing a plan based on which one fills out faster. I'm okay waiting if it means we get a higher quality product and that we are protecting airport. This airport is, by any definition, a fledgling airport. Any impact of residential off of the runways could have very negative impact on our ability to expand it. This is not Sky Harbor. You can put residential under the flight path of Sky Harbor Airport. That airport will not be impacted. Its impact, as far as the impact of the airport, is already well established. We are just really now starting to, I'm going to use a pun, we are just now starting to take off with this airport. It behooves us to continue to be cautious with our planning, and planning by its very nature is continuous, or at least it should be. Things can develop over time. They can improve over time. They adapt over time. And I'm fine with that. But to run out and paint yellow, which is the residential designation, underneath the flight path is dangerous. And I have not seen here yet today, and I would like to see what we learned when we went to Decision Theater the other day, which is where is the flight path, where are the noise contours of those aircraft taking off, because they have significant impact inside of the Loop 202 over the property that Plan A designates as residential. Now, I know that in our definition of residential, there are many different designations, 1 acre, 2 acres, all the way up to high-density urban living, when often we talk about in our meetings the type of residential that folks would envision on inside the Loop 202. We keep pointing to Tempe. I will point out that if 15 years ago Tempe were to designate residential on their strategic plan underneath the flight path of Sky Harbor, there would have been fireworks, and quite frankly, there were fireworks between Phoenix and Tempe, and I don't know all that well that Tempe would like it. I also, with all due respect to Mr. Pollack, disagree that jobs follow residential. Retail jobs follow residential. Retail follows residential, but residential follows jobs. The reason there's that high-density urban living in Tempe is because there are a lot of jobs in north side of Tempe, and there are a lot of jobs in South Scottsdale, a lot of jobs in nearby downtown Phoenix. That residential developed because those jobs were already there. Plus, they have light rail coming. They have the Tempe Town Lake. They have ASU. There are a lot of amenities, and Mill Avenue being successful, a lot of amenities there that people wanted to follow. Those things have to build up first before we get the type of high-density residential that might be, okay, near the airport. And even in my opinion, sir, and you can correct me if you feel I'm wrong, I think between the build-out of the commercial section or a build-out of any type of residential here, that specific type of residential that could be compatible is going to be 30 years anyway. The idea that Plan B, and I agree that the Plan B was came up here in about a week or so, but the idea that that type of plan is new and it's only been here a week is not true. You recognize that? Concept B? This is the Concept B. This came out when we first started this project, and I know you can't see it, but the date, and at 40 years old, it's starting to get harder to see this. But it says in the very bottom, December 13th, 2007. So this plan has no residential inside Loop 202 either. This was one of the alternatives. This was a discussion point. But we have looked at the possibility of keeping that residential outside of the 202 for the very reason of the flight paths. I have some concerns on Plan B, which is Elliott Road and how do we develop the inside of that. But adding residential on the inside of this at this point, I think, very much premature. And what I would like to see and show, one thing that we haven't seen here today, and Scott, do you have it?
We do.
I would like to see, can we put that up then? Or do you have it on a PowerPoint, or how are we going to present it? I would like to see what those flight paths are, because I know a lot of folks, the Decision Theater last Thursday, I actually went on Wednesday, I believe, had some pretty good information on the flight paths and the noise, and we're looking at areas that have in excess of 75 decibel. And it's interesting how this flies right over, and I think it behooves us as a council to take a look at that again and show it to the public on what we're talking about as far as flight overpass.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, yes, we went to Decision Theater last week. We went through this exercise again just to kind of, we're going to test the limits of our technology here, but hopefully this works. What we're going to show you is two examples. We took a commercial airplane, which is the MD-80, which we're all familiar with. Allegiant flies out of there today. It's typically a noisier type of aircraft, but it's a good relationship of what goes out of there today for commercial. We'll also show you a cargo, a 757 type of aircraft that will fly. What you'll see on the screen, hopefully, and actually took some screenshots, if you want to pass that out to council. We'll try and do this on the screen. Hopefully this shows up. What you'll see is the sound footprints as it radiates out from the airplanes as they follow a flight path. And the flight path was based on 80%, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, of the flights of passenger jets leaving the airport. This was taken from a December timeline.
November
timeline, and 80% propensity of those flights, where they fall. We can show up here on the map again. You'll have that 80%. It ranges everywhere from just south of the power lines along Elliott all the way up almost to the US 60. It spreads out as it goes out east. That's again based on the height, the weight, the temperature, the load factor, the airplanes taking off and their capability. And obviously the most important is their safety as they ingress and egress out of the airport. Then what we did is we took, utilizing a third-party consultant called ATAC, they do this internationally. They did this for the Dubai folks. So they have quite a bit of experience doing this. They take that flight line. They take the type of aircraft we suggest to them. They go out and model what that sound footprint will do. So we're going to run through this. We're going to stop at a couple key points. So why don't you start that?
Sure.
Just stop it right over.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We're going to stop it right here. So, and this is, we're utilizing Plan A. We're trying to zoom it up. So that, when we talk about high-density urban living, that high-density residential that is often talked about, and again, this is not the single-family barbecue in the backyard. This is, I think our standards, John, are minimum of 3 stories. 3 stories on up. So this would be compact urban environment. You'll have a threshold of the MDA of an 85 dB. Now, what we did at Decision Theaters, simulated outside of activity in an urban environment, and that outdoor environment was what?
Typical urban environment is between 70 and 75 decibels, and residential was about 60 to 65.
Okay, so here you'll see this example. Underneath that flight line, the MD-80, you have an 85. Now, I want to...
I think that I just want to verify that what you're doing here is... There was a broad band of what the typical, the 80 percentile was or whatever. Does this represent the middle of that band?
Correct.
Or does it represent the worst case? Or, in other words, is the middle coincidentally right there? At the center of that 85 decibel circle?
We took the midpoint of that 80%.
Okay, so you took the midpoint. That's right. All I wanted to ask. Thanks.
Right. So some may fly a little bit further south. Some may, move a little bit to the north. Just depends on the aircraft and the pilot's capability of making that turn and keeping safe. One of the things we also did is outside 85 is pretty significant. What we also did is took that activity inside. Typical office environment is 50 dB. So for example, if we were all to be quiet here for a few seconds, that's typically about 50 dB inside of a constructed building. Our industrial hygienists that we used to give us information on sound indicated that typical office construction, an office in this environment can be both office building or a residential condo tower built with CMU or concrete, can typically reduce sound by about 35 to 40 dB. So inside, that would drop potentially from 85 to nearly 50. Do you have a question? So we could continue this out, but maybe if you want to just continue that out to...
I don't know why I've got a lot more questions today than I do when I did the other day, but I do. Again, this particular flight path shows that we have 85 as at the most intense location there, but it also shows that we have 65 and 60 and some 70, et cetera, all up in these single-family backyard neighborhoods. Now, this is a hypothetical question. Where do you think you'll get more complaints from if you had this, whatever we call it, medium to high-density residential in this location with that noise attenuation or out there where it's 65 or 60 in the single-family residential? It's a hypothetical question.
Councilmember Truitt, I think the opportunity whether or not council will decide either now or in the future to allow some type of residential, either inside or outside of the freeway, this council will have the opportunity to determine whether or not we want to require certain sound attenuation in any type of building, whether it be residential or office environment. So in the future, I think if there were to be residential considerations in this area and the council decided to do some sound attenuation requirements, the goal would be to minimize that impact to residential. Outside of that, with existing single family, I think, you know, Lynn Cousy, our executive director from the airport's here. I mean, we just talked about this last month at senior staff meeting where we had an individual out of Gold Canyon, you know, miles away, that took offense to the sound that the MD-80 was creating in his backyard out at Gold Canyon. So he was calling as every Allegiant flight was taking off, complaining about that sound. Now that person is 10 miles out further east. Sound affects different people at different levels. So you could have a complaint up on Main Street that's far away from the activity going on from Gateway, but they perceive an impact. It's a difficult. You might have a feeling of the impact of sound versus what I might differ. I grew up in Washington, D.C. underneath the flight path of National. So there was a plane flying over me every 40 seconds. Did I notice it? Not unless I looked up, because it was part of that urban environment. And that really gets to the point of what we're talking about here is what we're proposing now, this either Plan A or Plan B, is a more of an urban environment, with different type of densities and mixtures of uses. And that brings a different level of sound impact to the area. But if people are moving into that area or acting in the area, typically those type of people are more familiar, more resilient to the sound impact.
It's a very subjective question, so I appreciate your attempt to answer it.
Scott?
We get a little dangerous when we start playing the hypothetical game, because we could speak hypothetically about FAA changes to flight patterns, and you have MD-80 departures here, and on the next page, Boeing 757, which are getting much quieter. And I also don't want to get too caught up in discussions about the existing residential, because there's nothing we can do about that. That's there. It's increasing encroachment here. And I go back to my point before. The idea of the urban environment and being in the center of the noise and the underneath flight paths, we've seen that before and seen some of these things coexist successfully. But the idea that that kind of environment is going to develop here any faster than the commercial would develop here, I think we're stretching it. We don't have the jobs, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the amenities here that people want to live around and want to develop. Four-story, I could point to four-story apartment right now that would take a lot of noise. It's all in how you build them. I don't think the environment exists yet. So again, I'm back to proceed cautiously. And when you look at this first slide, and I hope that folks can see these slides from home, the highest decibels, 85 dB, flying right over the top of this area, right over the top of it. By the time you get to the north in some of these, it is down. It's still loud over at Ellsworth and probably Guadalupe there. It still gets loud in there, but it gets quieter as a new airplane. It's still the concentration of that level of noise there. If it were designated residential and the right type of residential did not get constructed, that is the Tempe style, we would have significant problems in growing this airport, and I just say proceed cautiously.
Okay. I do have a bunch of requests to speak on this item, too, so I assume we'll be taking public comment. It is a special council meeting, but let's continue with the council discussion, and then if you guys want to wrap up or figure out where you're at. Vice Mayor.
A couple comments. Question about, Mark, the question that was asked about how you reached Plan A, you said after taking the input from the property owners. But I think appropriately you would say that after taking the input from the property owners and considering the impact that would have on the airport, that you reached that conclusion. Wouldn't that be a fair thing to say?
Vice Mayor Walters, members of the council, the development of the plan as we looked at appropriate uses and locations went back to the feedback that we had and direction we had from all of you
to do things that were consistent with the intent to protect airport operations. We believe that what we have proposed in Alternative A, in the type of residential that's proposed with that area, again, understanding that this is a long-term vision of what could occur within the in the future, is an appropriate use within that area.
And in that regard, there's an edict in medicine that, you know, it's the first do no harm clause. And I think that we have that same charge here. It's the first do no harm to the airport clause. I would like to see, and I've written down a few things that, that from my perspective, were either not stated strongly enough in this plan or felt like they were missing from the plan. And one is that I really feel like up front there should be an explicit statement. And I found it alluded to and woven throughout the plan, but I want an explicit statement up front that says something like protection of flight corridors in a way that allows for the broad and growing use of the airport is of paramount importance. Now, I can give you that language later on, John, but I think that something like that up front is very important. Another thing that came to light as people were talking about it last week when we were at the Decision Theater and letters we've gotten this week, and I'm sure we're going to hear from other people, is this sense that once it's in this plan, that it's in concrete. And that's very concerning to me as well. And so I'd like a statement somewhere in there, and I don't know which page it goes most appropriately on, but that says this subarea plan is a living document. It is anticipated that there will be changes in this plan over time as technological advancements, development, and other variables take place. Now, the wording on that could be changed slightly, but I want it clear to all future people who are using the document that it is a living document, that it is not hard zoned. I think that there was a recommendation from that we got from the DMB folks on the implementation of, you know, on this paragraph that we got. I thought that was well written, well thought out. I liked that. And those are some of the things that I want to make sure that I had an opportunity to give input on, because I think that things will change. I absolutely support what Scott said. I think that the danger here is that we move too fast, and we've made a lot of changes that I think are positive in terms of creating those urban cores. If we could move things up closer to the airport on the sides of the airport than they are, I would support that. But once again, let me go back to my statement that I made earlier. The current general plan, because I called John yesterday to verify this, the current general plan in that area that really is the main crux of the difference between A and B, if those were the only things that we were looking at, the current general plan is much more consistent with B than it is with A. And so if we just, and one of the suggestions by somebody was, well, let's just take that piece out, have that discussion if we need to make a decision. Interesting idea, because you take that out and you are left with the general plan, which, as I said, is much more consistent with B. I mean, you know, I'm okay with that. I just don't want us to move ahead of our knowledge in a way that's detrimental to the airport. And I want to make sure that that's clear to everybody picking up the plan and looking at the plan. And I really would like a statement in there that talks about that. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Kyle.
I concur with council members on each side of me. The information that we need to make sure is out there is this is not set in stone, that it will change over time depending on circumstances, but of utmost importance is the protection of the airport. It's absolutely imperative that we protect the airport. And in reading some of the letters that we've received, it's interesting to me that we have some property owners that think that somehow that they're going to be able to just have housing rooftops in there as other areas of the city, and it absolutely is not even an option. And so future discussion is not going to change that particular element of this discussion. We will not have the standard rooftops underneath, and as demonstrated here with the sound corridor, you cannot have those rooftops there. You endanger the viability of this airport, and so that particular discussion that some may be holding out for is definitely not an option.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I just remembered one other element that I had talked with John about yesterday. One of the concerns I have, and I don't have an answer for this, so I'm just putting it out there for discussion by the next council, because I don't have an answer. When I talked to John, he didn't have an immediate answer either. I don't know if there is an answer. But one of the concerns I have is if you move ahead and you, and at some future point in time, you move ahead with densities that are being looked at in Plan A, I want to ensure that the construction of those does not mirror some of the other kinds of densities that we have in air. And I'm going to take the example of Fiesta Mall. From my perspective, as somebody who is dealing with the area of Fiesta Mall 20, 25 years down the road, that level of density, when it's apartment dwellings and in many instances those apartments were not of the highest standard of apartment that could be constructed, then becomes a detriment to the area, not an asset for job growth. And I don't know what you can do in terms of zoning or plan or some sort of designation that you put on there so that you don't end up with a situation that is actually the antithesis of what we're trying to create here, which is creating kind of a housing stock that attracts workers. And the other piece that I wanted to state about this whole jobs follow housing comment that is made by Elliot Pollack, there has to be some element of that that isn't correct. And the reason I say that is I want to point to Queen Creek, I want to point to Gilbert, and I want to point to Mesa and say if jobs simply followed housing, Mesa would have more jobs than it has today. I think that that it also, there are other things that happen as a result of it. And the university in Tempe is part of the reason that there are jobs in Tempe. And I would venture to say that the reason you're going to get jobs out there is because there's an airport and there's a university. And I think that those are going to be big drivers of jobs in that area. The housing already exists. It exists in Gilbert, it exists in Mesa, it exists in Johnson Ranch, it exists in Pinal County. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be additional housing there. There should. But this notion that somehow we need to create more housing, because surely we don't have within any driving distance people who would be looking for jobs, seems on the face of it to me a silly notion.
All right. So conclude the presentation on the. All right. Next up then will be public comment. Pike Oliver is my first card, followed by Ralph Pugh.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Pike Oliver with W Holdings. For the record, our office is at 1121 West Warner Road, Suite 109 in Tempe. I'm here this morning representing landowners that have property within the Mesa Gateway Strategic Plan area and also have properties in the town of Queen Creek just to the south in the vicinity of Ellsworth Road and Germain Roads. And I guess first of all, I'd just like to say that we applaud the effort that the city of Mesa has taken with this visionary strategic plan. It's the right way to do planning and taking a broad look at the 32 square mile area with a view towards preserving the opportunities and reinforcing the opportunities that both the university and the airport will bring to the area is, I think, going to bring great benefits to the city and to the surrounding communities. That said, we do see that there are a few details that remain to be worked out. I know there are efforts ongoing between the town of Queen Creek and the city of Mesa to address some of those. We think it's important to get those refined and incorporated within this overall strategic plan. And while it's very general, at the same time, to the extent that these details can be worked out, it'll make it a better and longer lasting template for a very strong and significant future. So I'm just here to urge you to allow the time for all of the parties involved to bring refinements before the Planning Commission, have the Planning Commission give it proper and due consideration, and then allow this to move forward to the City Council in due course. It's my sense that as the city's consultant indicated, all the parties have been fairly identified, and I think everybody's at the table. So I don't think it's an issue of trying to address concerns of folks who haven't been participating, nor should latecomers necessarily get a closer seat at, or more significant seat at the table. But as in all of these things, there are details that just take time to work out. As someone has said a number of times, the devil is in the details. I think that this council can take credit for setting the table, and perhaps it will have to see some others at the table to enjoy the repast once it's finally out of the kitchen. But I'd say don't rush the cook. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Okay. Rolf Pugh. Followed by Mark Metzner.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Thank you very much. Ralph Pugh at 1930 East Brown Road. First of all, to the departing council members, thank you for your service to this community. Those of us that are natives of Mesa and citizens here appreciate it very much, along with all the folks in our community. I'd like to say just a couple of things, Mayor and Council, this morning, and respectfully urge you to continue the vote on this matter. I'm here this morning on behalf of Mr. Ross Farnsworth, Mr. Warren Steffi, Mr. Nelson Stewart, Mr. Peter Van Ryan, and Mr. Jim Boyle, all important and significant property owners affected by this plan. We think that a continuance is very important for a few simple reasons. One, Mayor, you were exactly right what you said in the work session, or as we started this item, this council has dealt with this for a long time. But it will be the Planning and Zoning Board that exists today and the new council coming in next week that will actually implement this plan. That's not an easy thing to do. The implementation procedures for this plan are a little bit cumbersome. Frankly, if you consider the fact that you got this Aerotropolis vision for the area, you then have the framework plan, then you have this land use plan, and an existing general plan, somehow magically these are all going to get mixed together and voila, things are going to happen just right. It will be difficult. There will be situations where you have folks who have land that is inconsistent with this strategic plan, but is perfectly consistent with today's City of Mesa general plan. There's no reference as to how to handle that. How will the new council handle that, and how will they deal with those cases? Secondly, the whole concept of the fact that the plan maybe ought to consider a phase-in to this, Mayor and Council, or clear implementation procedures, or how about this? There's no clear procedure even in the narrative today for how to amend this plan. If you adopt this plan, there's no clear way to amend it. Here's what's going to happen. If you approve a plan, then what's going to happen is a property owner who has a buyer or a user that is what you want to see is going to have to come in, amend the strategic plan, amend the general plan, rezone the property. And it's going to take a lot of effort and time and money. It makes more sense to us to adopt this plan as a strategic plan that is truly a specific area plan under state statute that is a subpart of the general plan, and everybody has clarity. What the developers coming into Mesa want and what current landowners want, Mayor and Council, is clarity, not confusion and multiple plans. And I honestly think that's what we have today. Very briefly, Mayor, because I know you've got a lot of speakers, if the council is going to make comments or give some thoughts today on those of us who have applied or at least made requests for changes, let me highlight just a couple of them. Mr. Nelson Stewart and his property are content with and would support Plan A. I can tell you this much. With respect to Mr. Peter Van Ryan, his property is really important. It's right in the confluence of the freeways at Hawes and Warner. If you look at both Plan A and B, neither one of them do what really ought to be there. There ought to be some commercial on that southeast corner and some mixed-use employment on the north side of that. That would bring more opportunity to this area. Mr. Ross Farnsworth has a piece of land right across the street from the entrance to the airport today, just south of that, that is today in the general plan for industrial uses. He intends to move his business from Gilbert to Mesa and to build the plumbing warehouse facility that they have there. That case will be one of your first cases that will have inconsistency with the strategic plan, consistency with today's general plan, and what do you do? And finally, Mayor, Council members, as you saw in the last exhibit with the MD-80, Mr. Warren Steffi owns the property at the far edge of this plan, at the northeast corner up there at Signal Butte and the power lines. When you looked at that flight pattern today, it was crystal clear that his land is not affected by those flight patterns or noise, and he'd like to see a blended residential use there that would allow some medium to high density residential along with the office and employment uses. And finally, Mr. Jim Boyle, the dairy farmer, the dairyman on Elliott Road, would support Plan A for the Elliott Road corridor. Mayor, Council, thank you for listening to us. We urge patience and continuance this morning. Thank you.
Mark? Followed by James Boyd.
Morning. I'm Mark Metzger, the Boeing Company. We have been at this an awfully long time. I do have a short public service announcement before I begin, though, because the last time we talked, there was so much interest from a lot of people in getting the blue suit that I went ahead and opened a requisition on jobs@boeing.com for an experimental test pilot. Master's degree, 15 years experience, appropriate certificates, and pass a flight check by me, and you'll get your blue suit. When we started this, I had a flat stomach and you had dark hair. So some things have changed, but the basics isn't. And I won't need the 3 minutes because the basics still remain the same. Airports and residences are a very bad mix. They just do not play well together. That's a fact. It's a fact every place we go. It's a fact when you talk about SeaTac or John Wayne or any place else. And if those city councils could go in with a magic wand and wipe out the present residences and put jobs in there, they would do that. But it's too late. They can't go back and do that. The second thing is incompatible zoning is going to cost you jobs, and it's going to cost you the future of the airport. And it could cost you huge financial penalties as you go back in to insulate homes, to change things, and try to make the homes more compatible with the airport. We wanted to rectify the jobs resident ratio in Mesa, which is where we started more than 8 years ago. We wanted more jobs here. That is still the consideration. That's still what we're struggling with. And that's still what the Boeing Company is here to support you for. So really, all I have is that we started this with a safe way in and a safe way out of the airport. The general plan developed around that safe way in, safe way out, and compatible land use. We provided you with the data that you've asked for, and I answer any questions that you have for me.
Appreciate the Boeing Company being in Mesa and the work that you've done trying to protect the airport out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
James Boyd, followed by Jason Barney.
That's Jim Boyle. Frank Boyle.
Please, come on up.
Just wanted to make sure there wasn't a James Boyd here.
L in your E, so it looks like
okay, sorry. My name is James Boyle. I reside at 19645 East Elliott Road in Mesa, Arizona. My family owns two dairy farms along Elliott Road, and we will continue to own those farms until we can find an end user to purchase the property. I just have a very brief comment to make about the process and some questions that I've yet had answered despite being involved in the public hearings and talking to city staff. Plan A was presented as in early March after consultation with many stakeholders, including the airport, including Boeing, was presented as the alternative to be voted on by both the Planning and Zoning Board and the City Council. I still am unsure what changed between the end of March and May 9th when Plan B was presented. It seemed that everyone agreed that Plan A initially was what was to be voted on. I don't know what changed between Plan A and Plan B, but it seems Plan B was presented with very short amount of time for the public to have input on, and I find that very concerning. And I would just like to urge the City Council to postpone any decision between A and B until we can have a little more time determine the actual impact. And that's all I really would like to say.
Thank you. Jason Barney. And Francis Selvin would be up next.
Hello, Jason Barney, Circle G Property Development, 4915 East Baseline, Gilbert. And with me is Bill Olson, also with Circle G. I've been involved with the process from early on, and there's a lot about this process to be commended, and a lot of good work has been done. I'm here to say, though, that we're not done. We've done a lot of good work. The people who've worked on this have put a lot of effort into it, but we're not there yet. We just provided a stack of letters from a handful of property owners in the area that represent a significant amount of acreage who feel like we do that progress is being made, but we're not there yet in terms of where we'd like to see this land. Specifically on our property, none of the input that I've provided on our particular parcel in this northwest quadrant has yet been incorporated in either one of these plans. One of the significant concerns that we do have is with regards to the implementation of this. In the staff report to council on page 3, there's a sentence that's quite disturbing to me. My understanding is that this is a recommendation document that would ultimately have to be brought into conformance with, or the general plan would have to be brought into conformance with this over time through property process. But there's a sentence underneath the implementation, I'll read it. This document, it will represent the council's latest policy direction for the development of the area. As such, it will be the, and this is the word that really is bothersome. As such, it will be the primary document used by staff when working with development proposals for the area. That's a problem. That puts this document at a legal standing above the general plan or any other kind of entitlement that's in the area. So here we are in a situation where we have property owners, including us, who have not yet arrived at a place where we feel like the land designations are appropriate for what we think they ought to be, but this becomes a primary document in governing how these land uses are handled. We don't want to walk in with a plan, a real user who wants to spend real money on a real building and bring real jobs, and have staff say, no, doesn't work with the plan, can't do it. But there's definitely elements about each plan that are good. We just feel like there needs to be a plan C out there. And we went and visited with staff last week, many of the property owners. We asked Mr. Wesley and others to produce a plan C to their, you know, with all respect to them, they didn't really have time to be able to produce a plan C in this amount of time with all the studies and financial impacts and traffic impacts that they'd have to do in conjunction with changes of land use designations. And so I'm here to say, you know what, we're working together, let's keep working together, we just need more time to do that. If a decision or an approval is made this morning, it's premature, and I can tell you that we and many others will aggressively oppose any future efforts to change any approval that would be made this morning into the general plan in the future, and thank you.
Francis Slavin?
He represents us and had to leave.
Okay. Paul Gilbert? Then Wayne Ballmer?
Thank you, Mayor. Paul Gilbert, 4800 North Scottsdale Road. At the outset, I express my immense chagrin that I no longer qualify for a blue suit from Boeing. But I'll continue to work on that in another forum, Mayor.
You have the right hair color.
Well, thank you. I'll leave that one alone. I represent Pacific Proving, a major owner of the property that is subject to this plan. Our major concern deals with flexibility. I think I'm well within the mark when I indicate that if one were to summarize the primary theme of the comments before the Planning Commission, it was the need for more flexibility. I appreciated the Vice Mayor's comments on flexibility. We have given you some language in separate correspondence that incorporates that flexibility language, and we hope that that would be incorporated in any motion that you make if you so proceed to adopt the plan. A good case in point is we work very closely together, everyone in this room except for Daryl, when we came in and adopted the Levine compromise that was made with us and Boeing, and my we're not asking to change that one iota. We're happy with it, might be too strong, but we're content with it to leave it in place. And in theory, the adoption of this plan today derogates somewhat from what we agreed to. So that's a concern for us, but I think that concern can be mitigated if our language, which I'd like to read into the record, is adopted, and that is implementation of specific land use locations and development parameters for properties with the mixed-use community, general plan designation, or planned community district zoning are governed by such documents and may vary from the land use designation shown on the illustrative plan or within the land use category descriptions. You have a copy of that. I must say that we have the support of DMB, so both the major property owners are in support of that language, and that really takes care of our major concern if we can have that language. And I don't believe that there is a lot of heartburn from the planning staff on adopting that language, although that's presumptuous of me, Mayor, and I'll let John Wesley comment on that further. I raised the issue, and I just want to do it one more time in this forum. I heard John Wesley say at the work-study session we had in Tempe that this is not a regulatory plan. I was delighted to hear that. I'm saying that again for the record, so there's no misunderstanding with regard to that aspect. The last comment we have in closing is that we like very much the framework study of the plan, and we think the framework ought to be the primary guide that is used by the City Council in the future in interpreting this plan. I guess my experience over a lot of years is showing here, but I get tired of coming down and nitpicking over whether our little piece is right in the blue or is it light yellow or so on. The framework portion of the strategic plan takes care of that, and I would like some language, if possible, in the record as saying that the framework plan really is the primary document that will implement the implementation of this plan rather than the colored plans per se. Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate this opportunity, and it hasn't been bad working with some of you that are leaving.
Thanks.
You can speak for yourself, Paul. It's been really, really, really painful from our end.
Wayne Bowman? And Wayne is representing, I think, on the card, the town of Queen Creek today.
Right. Mayor, Council, it's different to be in this seat now. But Mayor, Council, for the record, my name is Wayne Bowman. I'm the planning manager for the town of Queen Creek. And I would like to talk to you a bit this morning about the issues Queen Creek has. Queen Creek doesn't have a position on whether A or B would be selected. And you have a copy of a letter, I'm told, that the town received from me when this went to the Planning Commission. And we really had 3 points we wanted to talk to you about. The first was the definition of the general industrial. That was pretty broad, and we've asked to have that clarified, that it would have more in the way of also allowing light industrial and other uses. And I understand from Mr. Wesley that that suggestion has been incorporated in the material you'll be receiving. The second point, and for those of you who know me, know I like maps, so you have a new map this morning to talk about these two issues. The first has to do with access from the town to the airport area. As you know from driving through that area, the town has a problem with railroads through that area. Power Road, Sossaman Road, even Ellsworth Road until recently, the traffic could be stopped dead by a train coming through that area, and it was making it very difficult to move north to south, particularly as the town starts to anticipate the employment that would be at the airport, passengers that would want to come to the airport from areas to the south. To address that, the town is trying to extend Queen Creek Road west from where it ends at Ellsworth Road now. If you've been down there, it actually ends at a storm drainage channel. And the town approved modifications to its general plan last year to start Queen Creek Road, which is shown in red on your map, to go west, stay north of the railroad, and come into Germain Road. That would give the town another access north and south that isn't stopped by train traffic. And we have shown that. The town is working on doing it, and we can get it to Germain Road, which is our northern town limit. The challenge with that is Germain Road goes back to the railroad. So what the town would like is to propose that this new road come up to Pecos Road. And on your plan, it would be 80th Street. 80th Street is a collector street, and since it's an industrial area, it could be a major collector street. And the second map I've included is a sketch actually from Mesa's improvement standards showing it could be either a major collector or an arterial street. Either would work for the town. The town would just like a commitment to say 80th Street, when it's developed in the future, could go from Germain to Pecos to allow that traffic to get to Pecos so it could go east and west, north of the airport, and into and out of the airport, or north of the railroad and into and out of the airport more effectively. The third point has to do with transitional zoning and transitions between the two towns. We sort of look at this as if you think of it as a big shopping center with two main tenants and the freeway is the main access. In front of the main tenants, you have the offices, the restaurants, the warehouse, nice attractive things, and you can see that on your map. But behind the shopping center is where you have the loading docks and the truck traffic and the dumpsters and the beep, beep, beep of the fork loaders. And if a project came in like that to you, one of the issues would be, how do we handle the back of this new development? How do we make sure the back is attractive as it can be on the front? And from the town's perspective, we would like to see more of the light industrial designation on the north side of Germain Road. You can see from the map, it's already been done along Ellsworth Road on both sides as it approaches Ellsworth. And my map, the one I've given you, for instance, in the yellow circle on the left, is an earlier version of the plan that you have this morning. And you can see mine has dark purple, where the new plan actually has the light purple all the way over to the new road would be. That's a change. The town appreciates it. We've been involved in the process throughout. We've raised some of these issues, and you can see it's been changed there. The town would also like to request that it be changed east of Ellsworth Road, that about a quarter of a mile or thereabouts on the north side be more of the light industrial use than the heavy industrial use. The heavy industrial uses are the ones who would have more truck traffic, more of kind of the open uses, bus parking and other kinds of things, and that the concerns the town, and that doesn't make a good transition to the north to the south. So if we could ask the concurrence of the Mesa City Council to include a transition there, it would be greatly appreciated in order to help give Queen Creek a better front door to the airport. We realize the back door of this project from Mesa is the south side, but the south side is also the front door to the town. So the town's concern is how to make it as attractive and functional as it can be. So, Mayor, if you have any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them.
Scott?
Wayne, I have a question for you. Queen Creek is going through their, I think it's going to a vote of the people, their new general plan.
Yes, it was approved last
and
Wednesday night.
For the life of me, I was online and I was looking at the map, I think, two days ago. I'm struggling to remember, to the south of Germain Road, where you've asked us to reconsider to a light industry, what does your general plan show for that area?
Our plan shows general industrial as yours does. And the reason for that was to match what Mesa was doing on the north side of the street. The town would like to change to light industrial, but it was thought to be awkward given the fact that there was the heavy industrial on the north side. The town's concern is that Germain Road becomes sort of a heavy industrial traffic through the area. We've got CMC Steel to the far east end. Other uses have come through there. The town would like to have more flexibility on the south side of the road to more go to the light industrial area, but the concern was with the general industrial on the north side, the town couldn't do that.
Okay, because my concern was part of the reason for the lighter industry to the west was Queens Park. That little residential community is tucked in there. We tried to keep that as easy a transition as we could. And I wanted to make sure that And I didn't remember any residential this close to the runway for Queen Creek. It was back somewhere. The other thing is I guess I have some concern over how this Queen Creek Road comes up into, what's that between Sausalman and Hawes, the halfway road? 82nd?
Yeah. It doesn't exist at the moment, okay. But it would be 80th Street.
I guess my question is how is that going to affect Pecos Road? Because now you have a T-intersection, and part of this plan, and we haven't done it yet, is we needed to get a detailed plan as far as transportation and infrastructure and also financing. Those are the two plans we need to go forward. I agree we've got to work with you and help out with a lot of that southeast development, and how we're going to move that traffic, and we're hoping that some of that traffic is actually going to end up here in the job center and some of that net import. So how we move those folks efficiently up here and how we finance, that's an important point. And I don't want to, I'm a little cautious with making too many changes without getting a decent study done of this area. But I absolutely agree we have to help with getting a solid connection, and also looking at Meridian Road, which is another project too, and how we move that traffic. So I'm in support of the idea, but I'm a little cautious with this one right now. Thanks, Wayne.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Mayor. Just want to say that Queen Creek has been a great partner out at Gateway, been a good neighbor with the airport, and the transportation networks were linked. So we'll certainly try to do whatever we can in joint studies and cooperation with Queen Creek.
And Mayor, Queen Creek appreciates your support, and we're trying to work with Mesa as a partner.
Great. Thanks, Wayne. Okay, we have a motion on the floor in a second to refer back to P&Z. Let's go ahead and bring that back up and discuss the motion. Is there any other? I think we've had all the staff input we're going to get, so Mr. Truitt.
Seems like I'm not sure what it is that we're, are we just talking about the map, or are we talking about the study? Because the council agenda talks about the strategic development plan. To me, that's the whole entire study. Is that not true?
I think it comes with supporting documentation.
Well, but I just, like when we approved the West Main Street plan, I had a nice book that I could read, and I could read all the elements, and I could understand all of the elements. I don't have that on. I understand I got six slides or whatever.
Well, this thing was in your packet.
Okay. This is what, maybe the executive summary of the plan? What would you call this?
Mayor and Council, yes, this is, executive summary could be a term that would be used to it, but this is the compilation of the key findings and the key recommendations of the plan. This is what we're asking Council ultimately to approve. There are a number of background technical documents, the supporting memorandum that have been developed through the process, and Mr. McLaren has a notebook that has those in it. We weren't anticipating asking the Council to approve those, because again, that's the background technical information that led to this document. But those will ultimately be available also for anybody to read and utilize.
Thanks.
Okay, Vice Mayor.
John, there were a couple of process issues that were addressed. One is, and I have a question actually regarding, I am on the big one on page 33. Where it states that as an incentive for property owners to coordinate development of their plan in light of the newly adopted land use as put forth by the plan, it is recommended that a minor general plan amendment be required instead of a major general plan amendment for those cases that are consistent with this plan but inconsistent with the current general plan. But we aren't going to go and amend somebody's general plan designation without the approval of the property owner, are we?
Mayor, Councilmember Walters, that is correct.
Okay.
We would work with those property owners to.
So, and let's just take the case of Mr. Farnsworth's property, because that was raised by Mr. Pugh. In the current general plan, he has the designation for the kind of use that he wants to go and do today. So he wants to move his business, he wants to bring it here to Mesa, he wants to put it near the airport. Is there anything in this document that would prevent him from doing that?
Mayor, Councilmember Walters, what I anticipate would happen with that specific example is it would come in, we would look at it and see that it's not consistent with what this plan recommends for the area. We would advise the applicant of that. They want to continue through the process based on the current general plan. We would work with them to get the best plan they could under that scenario, bring it forward to both P&Z and Council, pointing out the difference between the two plans. And again, since this would be the most recent recommendation, staff would likely be recommending denial because it's not consistent with this plan, but ultimately Council would have that choice then to make which of the two plans better implements what they want to see happen in this area. Is there enough consistency with what you really want to go that the current general plan would work? And it could easily be approved. But that's the way that we would approach it at that point.
But that is problematic because the person is acting in response to their existing general plan designation, and we're saying we aren't going to amend it, but we aren't going to let you build under it. Now, that is different than what we did on the TOD, where we gave people the option and either-or option. I think that's problematic in terms of a landowner because, in essence, by recommending denial, I think under, you know, I don't know, I think you've got some legal problems there. I'm just looking at you, Ms. Spinner, because I just think you've got some legal, there's no legal problem. So we can say, we aren't going to force you to amend your general plan, but we're never going to approve anything you bring forward under the designation of the current general plan that you have.
I think it depends on what the request is. If they're requesting a rezone, then council has discretion to approve or disapprove a rezone. If they are simply asking for a site plan approval that is consistent with the general plan and is consistent with the hard zoning on the property, then that's a different analysis and could result in some issues.
And I understand legally if they have current hard zoning, the discussion is moot. The hard zoning prevails. But we can tell people that we aren't going to rezone. I mean, we aren't going to change their general plan designation, but functionally, we have forced them into a changing of their, we may have forced them into a changing of that general plan designation by recommendation of denial coming out of staff. So I think that that's something that's going to have to be discussed. Under state law, wouldn't we have to change our process for our things with minor plan amendments, major plan amendments, wouldn't we have to enact a change in that in order to do what's recommended in this paragraph here? Because currently, if certain criteria are met, then you have to go through the either minor plan amendment or major plan amendment.
Mayor, Councilmember Walters, yes, we do anticipate changing again the definition for what constitutes a major plan amendment in this area to make it easier. Kind of going back the other direction, a year or so ago, we did some things to make it a little bit harder to amend the general plan. We want to go back and make it easier again to implement the plan as adopted by council. So we will be bringing that forward based on what's ultimately approved.
And I guess I see that in terms of legally amending the general plan, approval of the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan does not legally amend the general plan, but I think functionally it amends the general plan. Would you disagree with the statement that I just made?
I guess it's a matter of terminology. As stated in the report and mentioned earlier, whatever council adopts, staff's going to look at that as being the latest policy direction from council, latest direction for us of what you want to see happen. So in that respect, functionally, I guess it would.
Okay, those were my questions.
Mr. Truitt.
I remember reading something in one of the many documents that we've got on this, and maybe it was the planning and zoning meeting minutes, but there was something said that you, when is the next time that we would go through a general plan update?
Mayor, Councilmember Truitt, 2010 is when we would anticipate starting such an action, shooting for 2012, 2013 to finish it up.
And would you not be looking at bringing this forward and making it part of that update?
That would be another opportunity we'd have at that time if we haven't done it through minor and major plan amendments, with those adjustments.
Okay. Scott?
I guess for the topic of conversation that we're on as to whether we compare this future possible zoning actions toward this plan, how does this plan differ any in consideration of those proposals to, say, the areas around Falcon Field? Do we not have the same issue where the Falcon Field plan is not identical to the general plan, and so the general plan Are we not in that boat there, too? And what about the Lehigh area and some of the other plans?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers says specifically in the Falcon Field area, you are correct, that sub-area plan did recommend some land use designations that were not the same as the current general plan. Specifically, the southwest corner of Thomas and Wrecker, the current general plan, I'm probably going to get backwards, I believe is Business Park. And when we studied it through the Falcon Field sub-area, we thought the mixed-use employment might be a better designation. Mm-hmm. And so we've had some requests come forward in that area. We worked with the applicants, suggesting that they submit minor plan amendments along with their rezoning requests so that we could bring the two together. Ultimately, as those came through, we determined that the business park really probably was going to be the better designation. So those general plan amendments didn't happen. The rezonings occurred consistent with the current general plan.
Okay. So this isn't new with this plan, the idea that we'll have to look at this and look at the general plan plus look at zoning. I guess then the next thing is, what happens in 2010? We reopen this. Will we take the strategic plan for all of the sub-areas, including Falcon and this one, and try to integrate those, one, into the general plan, but also make changes to these strategic plans so that the two are the same, or will these become moot?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, that's a good question that we haven't thought about a whole bunch yet. The current general plan was adopted in 2002 when the council approved it, and then the vote of the public. State statutes require us to relook at our general plans every 10 years, so we'll be working towards that again in 2012. And certainly the sub-area plans that have been adopted in the meantime will be information we'll use as we look at the general plan for any refinements that need to happen. And we should be able to use that process to try to bring all those things into harmony. But that's something we will work through as we develop that new plan.
And I think that needs to be the next step. And it's just, is it every 10 years do we have to adopt it? So it's kind of like the council districts. I bring that up because I'm the one that represents, I have 45,000 voters, registered voters in mine, and I think Kyle spends half the money to run because he has about 12,000. So things 16. Change. 16,000. Oh, I'm sorry. 16,000. I didn't discount the 4,000 people in Kyle's district. But, I mean, Mesa is growing. It's changing. The plans grow and change. It goes back to what this entire side of the table has said at this point. Planning is fluid. It needs to stay open. It's the process that's important. And as we finalize this vision, we need to move this vision into, voters have to have their say, and that's going to come, it came with about 20-plus meetings, but the voters are going to get their final say in a few years when we update that plan, and I just want to make sure, put a little seed in our minds that our strategic plans, our visions, need to be incorporated into that, those changes of the general plan, and the vision also has to make sure that those are the same once we go to the vote forward to the voters, so that we're on the same page. Thanks.
Okay, the discussion is back to referring it back to the P&Z. My only comments on this is I think that inside the loop 202, as it's been described, from it's going to be the high voltage line on the north is a very visible barrier, power road on the west side, and then the loop 202 in the east and the south. I have not been and remain steadfast saying that is not an area for residential encroachment. We went through a great deal of work to protect the arrival route along the future Gateway Freeway, and I think by not having residential in this area, it protects the departure route to the north. And I think that if we can do that and keep residential out of there permanently, we will have a economic synergy with the airport being viable with ASU Polytechnic and the freeway and everything else. If we let residential get into that area, I think it's going to put all kinds of dampers on the future success of the airport. I appreciate what Councilmember Summers expressed as far as the airport is just getting started, and now is not the time to sprinkle it with residential apartments or new urbanism or whatever in that area. If it's to come, let's let the airport become successful. Let's have the trend around the country for higher urbanism at the end of runways with new technology for sound attenuation, and if that's the market trend at that point, then go ahead. But at this point, I am not in favor of trying to change our general plan to allow residential in that area. So that would be my statement. If this thing goes back to P&Z and back out to public comment, if it waits to be a master plan amendment in 2010 or 12, so be it. I would like to have wrapped this up because this council spent the money and we've been studying this for quite a while. If the sentiment is to continue the discussions out into the future, then this will certainly be a learning experience for the new council as they go out to receive public comment, because it's going to be split. There's going to be developers that want to turn a buck and get something that is, I'm not sure that is in the long-term best interest, but it'll certainly be an economic opportunity for some people that own land to move on. But I think if you want to look out at a build-out vision for Mesa, I think we should hold to something of a higher level. And I think that higher level is going to take a little longer to maybe absorb than residential would, but I think the benefit long term is going to be much greater for the city of Mesa. So I would have gone for alternative B today. If it gets referred back to P&Z for additional discussion, it'll be obviously the decision of five new council members here sometime out in the future. So, Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. And I could be wrong. I have a sense that that Tom's motion is going to pass. And so I'd like to request that included in that, and I don't know if you want to amend the motion, Tom, to include it, or if you're willing to amend the motion to include it, but that the guidance that we have given be referred back to planning and zoning along with that. So the comments that I've made about including something up front that talks about the, obviously I can't hold them to that, but giving that recommendation to them, that they put in there something about that, and also the language about the flexibility, about its being a living document. In addition, the language that both parties that are in ownership of the GM Proving Ground have recommended, and I concur with that language. I think it's good language, and I'd like to see that in there. So I would appreciate it either that be included as part of the motion that we send those back, or that somehow the direction be given that the comments that are made here today be included. I am encouraged that there were a number of the new council members who are sitting here today, because I'm going to reiterate something I said. I see, first of all, let me state that having heard what I've heard this morning, I think that there are still some legitimate outstanding issues that have not been resolved. One of them being, and I didn't hear it raised this morning, although it may have been raised when I stepped outside, the issue of the open space that remains on the map if you went with alternative B that is inappropriate in that location, and that needs to be resolved. The process issues, and Mr. Pugh raised some of those that need to be resolved. And so I'd like to send those back also to be resolved, give staff additional time to work on those. But I would also like to state, I'm going to say it again, I think there is some council shopping going on here. And I think that the incoming council members need to be aware of that and learn from the mistakes that we have made. And we, I believe, successfully corrected the mistakes that we made very early on. But it is tempting sitting in this seat to want to make everybody happy, and to assume that if you work on something long enough that you can make everyone happy. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that you cannot make everybody happy in this job. You will not be able to make everyone happy with this plan. And if you do make all of the property owners happy, you will kill the airport. So those are my final comments. Thank you.
Anyone else? Scott?
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to make a few comments, thank a few people. Let me start with this. If we're going to continue this on Tom's motion, I think one thing we should look at, I'm open to suggestions on the inside of the Loop 202 to try to make that better. Elliott Road has some issues that have to be resolved. If somebody has some better ideas to help make that a vibrant area, a high job area that doesn't involve putting rooftops in, I'm all ears.
but I will resist the residential inside there. As for thank you, I saw a little stress, I think, on HDR's face. I don't know why, but they've done a fabulous job in presenting what I think is now 16 different plans. No, realistically, I think it's four. And thank you very much for your study. And to ASU and the Decision Theater, the noise process, the maps. I know that there wasn't a lot of room and a lot of people didn't get to see that, but it was really helpful in some of the decision-making that's been going on, is currently going on. Also to the 205 people that participated in some 20-plus public meetings over the past 18 months or so, I want to thank you for your time. I spent some time with a lot of those folks. I was really impressed at how many folks that just live out by me who are residents of the area and took a look at plans A and B in May and gave their comment. I really appreciated that, and it was a lot of fun doing that. So with that, that's all I have to say. So we'll see what happens. Thanks.
Tom?
Well, I guess two things. First of all, let me get to the bottom line. Claudia, I'm more than happy to amend the motion so that a CD of this meeting or this portion of the meeting be transmitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission or Board so that they have the opportunity to see every, not just the minutes and not just the executive summary, but everything that was said here today. I think it's absolutely critical. They're, of course, entitled to give it whatever weight they want, just like the new council is entitled to give it whatever weight they want, but it certainly should be considered, because I don't know of any stronger advocates for the protection of the airport over the last 8 years than Mayor Hawker and Vice Mayor Walters and some of these other people on this council who are leaving. So I think they're entitled to all the respect and deference and honor that they deserve for what they've done. So nothing inherent in this motion has anything to do with that degree of commitment. So however we want to express it, whatever you feel comfortable with, Claudia, and you, Mike, the second, I certainly would hope that the Planning and Zoning Commission would listen to what any portion of the City Council has to say. Secondly, this is not HDR, an indictment of the public process that we've had in this. This has been an unbelievable public process here. It's just so happened that something came up again 6 days before the Planning and Zoning Board met, and if they had voted on May 15th with 6 days' notice, I would not be making this motion, because the process, and Scott said a little while ago, the process is important. The process is important, and what we are doing here is just getting the cart a little bit in front of the horse. And how it comes back, I don't know. If this was a council that had one change, I don't know that we'd be quite so intent upon acting today. Claudia, does my statement satisfy your needs for the... Okay, then that's where I am. Cheryl?
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate that I asked some of the questions I asked just because I wanted to kind of stimulate the conversation. I really don't want it to be interpreted that I am supporting either A or B if we were to ever get to that point. I'll support the motion to continue because I think that the process is important. And the other thing is that I've had some in the things that people I've talked to and the conversations and the letters that I've read, I don't think that the people inside this loop are necessarily looking for the low-hanging fruit. In fact, I think some of them would like to see that urban density removed from their site, because they probably think they can get the industrial built before they can get the urban density. So I don't know that it is such a situation. I see that some out here maybe want different things that I don't know they're going to be very successful on, or hopefully aren't very successful on.
Tom? One other thing, I want to make sure that the record that I've now asked to be incorporated in the motion includes my approval of the language that was submitted by Pacific Proving and DMB that Claudia has made reference, and that Paul read into the record, and that I think you read into the record as well, Claudia, off the letter. So that clearly has my approval as well.
Mike? I'd support that, but also encourage P&Z and the new council to take a strong look at Queen Creek's position on transitioning from their front door. I think that's important for that community also.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, there is a motion and second to refer back to P&Z. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Aye. All right, it looks like it passes 6-1. So it will be referred back to P&Z.
Your last 6-1 vote.
Yeah.
It's a way to go out, you know.
Mayor, I think it's the only motion I've ever won, and it's the last one.
What kind, does that mean?
It's kind of how I started my career. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. All right, let's see. Hang on. Yes. Are there any requests? All right, then I'll entertain a motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, special council meeting is adjourned.